two village idiots with a love-hate relationship.
See, you got fat.
See, you still look like a 15-year-old girl, but not hot.
Who can't stop arguing over Oklahoma sports.
You know what, man? Why am I still talking to you?
Come on, we were doing good there, man.
It's the Just Okay Sports Podcast.
Sooner Nation, Thunder Nation, we are back. This is the Just Okay Sports Podcast. It's Just Oklahoma Sports with a surprise pod that we did not plan to do until, 25, 30 minutes ago? Both had some downtime and up watching the game. So anyways, we're going to rock this thing out. I'm Daryl. That's Jared, by the way. Jared, how are you, man?
Good. It's been a Friday. Dude, this week has been like, I felt like Tuesday. I was like, dude, this got to be Friday. Right, like we have to be like, you know, I feel like I've had like 3 weeks in one, but you know, it's Friday, so it's behind me. So yeah, excited. Last night wasn't a lot of fun, obviously. But we get game three's tomorrow?
Tomorrow, right? They play every other day, like throughout the whole series.
Yeah. So obviously the good thing is like they don't have a long travel.
Right. I mean,
so
they're gonna be there on their charter plane in 30 minutes, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say I think that's something that people like might not really consider as much, but it's like, dude, it sucks when you have to travel that far and you're playing somewhere. It's like, dude, Dallas is basically a neighbor. So,
right. Yeah. The travel side, which for both teams with injuries and things like that, it's going to be good. You know, it's not super long. I mean, I didn't even ask. I assumed Dallas just stayed here. But, I mean, this is literally close enough that via plane you could almost, like, after the game, fly home, be home and do all your practice and then fly back.
So can we talk about something that, like, kind of funny I saw on Twitter yesterday about something relevant to the game?
Okay.
Part of the series. Apparently, Luka is now ranked in the top 500 players on Overwatch. So I guess, and like apparently this happened like this week. So I don't know when he exactly found the time to do that, but which is crazy, by the way. Like 500 people in the world, he's in that number.
Wow.
So, or at least that's how I understood it. And it was like weird. Like also, like there's been a little bit of that going on lately. Oh my god, why am I blanking on his name now? Oh my god, this is how bad of a Friday it's been. Denver, what's his name?
Jokic?
Jokic, yeah. I don't know why I couldn't think of Jokic. Jesus. Jokic is like a big League of Legends player. Anyway, it's just really funny. Like they like you know how Jokic is usually like Mr. like yes, no,
yeah,
this doesn't help, whatever. Like he doesn't like it, but like dude, they asked him about League of Legends and he just went crazy. But the funny part to that to me is we were having this conversation and I just to roll into it, because we don't have a flow.
Yeah.
Luka is probably one of my favorite players off the court, but on the court is my least favorite player.
Yeah. Like we were texting with Troy because Troy couldn't jump on, you know, here kind of late afternoon lunch break here. And he said the same thing. He goes, dude, if Luka just wasn't so whiny, he might be the most liked player in all the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like literally all the stuff he does off the court, like, I mean, the gaming side, like, he drives cool cars. He seems really funny and personable with everybody off the court. You know what I mean? Like he seems like a genuinely good dude. And then it's like you get on the court. It's like, bro, I just like last night we were even talking about it. Like when he had that little one incident where he barely gets bumped by door, which it was kind of one of those deals where it looked like it was, you know, like when somebody walks up behind you and bumps your knee, like the back of your knee, and you kind of bow a little bit. It looked like that. And he like acted like he just blew out his whole knee for like 10 seconds for some reason, and then as soon as the ball gets in his hands, he's like, oh, just like between the legs. I'm like, okay, bro, like seriously. That and just the constant whining gets on my nerves. But I mean, the dude lit it up last night. He was, especially in that first quarter, I mean the whole game, but that first quarter, like it's like, dude, I swear he could have thrown the ball behind his back and he would have made it. It was insane.
Yeah, he came out on fire to start the game, there's no doubt, and that set the tone. I mean, that just that gave Dallas all the confidence in the world. And then you combine that with PJ Washington going nuts in the first half. I think he hit five or six threes in the first half. He ended up going 7 of 11 for the game. And so then they were just rolling, you know. Now the third quarter, I kind of watched the first half and I tweeted this. I said, look, man, they're shooting like at that point, I believe they were shooting like 55% from three at halftime, something crazy like that. And I was like, look, they ain't going to shoot three that good all night. So if you can get on a run, I think you can really take. And then they did in the third, and I went, here it comes. Like they're not maintaining it, the Thunder. And then they had some sloppy turnovers, just some sloppy defense. And next thing you know, the Mavs are back up 10, and it's like, okay, like they just answered the bell. And look, my number one overall takeaway before we get down in some weeds and some things is Dallas came out like they were down 2 games to nothing and played with that kind of energy all night long. And the Thunder they had some moments where they looked really good, but they had big moments where they were just kind of like, I think we're up 3-0. Whatever. We're fine. Like, it's good. And you just can't do that in the playoffs. I mean, the amount of times, like, and I get it, like a guy drives in the lane and you're all closing down, but then they kick it to the guy on the wing or in the corner and guys are just standing there going, I'm not even going to close out. Like, I'm just not, we're just not going to do it, you know, or there's some kind of pick and roll action and guys just not communicating who has what and who's going where. And so two guys close here and leave that guy wide open. And you could tell it wasn't a design system. It was just, they weren't communicating. I mean, it was just a sloppy game. And it literally like a bunch of kids going, we're up in a 3-0 series and it doesn't matter what we do. And now all of a sudden you've lost home court and you're tied 1-1. And now you got to go into the most hostile environment you've ever played in so far in this playoffs.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's, I think that's a big part of it. And I think if you want me to give you my big takeaway, and I guess the maybe a little bit of sunshine pump or whatever positive, it felt like Dallas was playing out of their minds. Like this was not a team that we'd even seen against the Clippers, except for maybe that little section they had against the Clippers when they tried to run it, you know, run back a 30-point deficit. But this felt like a team, like Dallas was playing at peak basketball. Ironically, what's funny about it too is that Kyrie really, he had a ton of assists, but he didn't score. I think he ended with like 9 points or something.
Yeah. 9 points. 9 points.
So he didn't. That was the guy we were talking about. Was the guy that was going to have to kind of lead the charge if Luka didn't get things right. But anyway, it felt like the Dallas team really played out of their minds. Like this is some of the best basketball we may have seen Dallas play in a while. And yet they only won by 9 points. I think it was nine. Was it nine? Mm-hmm. I think it ended at nine.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Thunder team looked really sloppy. I mean, like that fourth quarter, that last 6-7 minutes of the fourth quarter just felt like, I don't even know what you want to call it. It looked like they were just throwing stuff at the wall. I mean, it didn't, everybody was rushing
panicked,
shots.
Completely panicked and just were like, we got to hit a three. Like we got to make a big play and just were all over the place.
Well, they got away from their identity, right? Like they're that one more pass sort of offense and move the ball. And it felt like I could talk about it the next pod. But it was like, I want to go back and watch where it's like, how many series did it come down where somebody came down the court, made no more than one pass and then shot the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was like, it didn't even like a lot of those weren't even great looks. It was just somebody trying to, like you said, just trying to throw the ball up. So I guess to condense that a little bit, it's the Thunder played one of their worst games. That was the worst game they played in this playoff.
I still would say game one against the Pelicans was their worst game. I still think that game was worse. The Pelicans are just that bad. And they were able to pull out a win. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's true. I guess I should say the fourth quarter to me was as bad, especially that second half of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Was the worst basketball that I think I've seen the Thunder play, in a long time, not even outside the playoffs. So yeah, I mean, that's the bright spot is like, the Thunder played one of their worst games, a much worse than they usually do, and Dallas played much above what they usually do. So you hope that kind of is one of those things that gets, you know, that was a one-off, so to speak. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt. And by the way, we texted Troy since he couldn't be in, so he's been hitting us up. Some of his thoughts, a little bit like us. He said, focus, focus, focus. Too sloppy on their defense, defensive rotations. He said part of that was the Mavs, but a lot of it was us. Giddy was as bad as I could remember. And he said Dallas, PJ, and Tim Hardaway Jr. Played way, way over their heads in terms of hitting threes. That's not the norm. Neither is our shooting. And so, you know, a little bit what you said. I think there's still plenty of positive in it. And speaking of which, I'm going to be so opposite of what I was for most of the season right here. Definitely one of the negatives that everyone is harping on right now is Josh Giddey. You're seeing people tweet, he's unplayable in this series. You got to bench him. You got to bench him. You got to bench him. And look, it's not been pretty, but, matter of fact, I'm going to look this up while I'm talking. The thing that I would say though is, he looked awful in game one against the Pelicans. I mean, awful. And then he basically won game four. I mean, the whole Mark Daigneault getting doused with water and him walking into the locker room going, that's one bad MF-er. He was pointing to Josh Giddey. And he was coming in to praise Josh Giddey for his game because of how well he played. And so, like, it just cracks me up that everybody just 2 games ago was talking about how great Giddey's been. You know, and all these things, and now all of a sudden everybody just wants him off the roster. And look, I think you need to give him a short leash. You know what I mean? I think you need to feel him out, but to act like no way we just can't play this guy at all is, I think we need to slow our roll a little bit there.
Well, and I think people have to, I think people undersell other aspects. He was the first one, like, the team, that's another thing we haven't talked about. They came out at the beginning of the game and the Thunder looked flat.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was trying to do anything. It felt very, I mean, it literally felt like we were watching the Mavericks of game one.
Yes.
Nobody was energetic. Nobody was trying to do it. They just passed the ball around randomly. We felt like they'd take a shot. Giddey's the first guy that made a drive, seemed like he put some energy into the team a little bit and kind of got him rolling. I mean, he scored the first goal. You know, I understand you could look at statistics and all this, and it's like, overall, I don't think he had a good game. I'm not trying to say that. But at the same time, he was the first one to ignite that. And it's like, if he doesn't do it, I don't know who else does right there. Because even Shea looked out of it to start.
By the way, just to give you some perspective, game one of the Pelicans, Josh Giddey was 1 of 6 from the field and 0 of 2 from 3 in game one. That's 16.7% field goal percentage, a 0 3-point percentage. Now, the next game, he shot 33% from 3-point range and 44 from the field. The next game, 61.5 from the field and 57% from 3. And then the next game, he was 50% from the field and 66% from 3. And that's the game he basically won us the series, right? So, and here's a great example. Here's what's hilarious. I listened to a couple different Mavericks podcasts, like I said the other night, kind of leading into the game one, and they were all like, Tim Hardaway Jr.'s done. He's done. They were like, it's been a month. He's played like trash. If he's one of the first guys off the bench, I'm going to lose my mind. Blah, blah. I mean, they won him out. He won them the fourth quarter. I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. iced the game. And so, look, this is where you have to trust. It's a little bit different than college in the pro levels, right? As far as that coach is going to lose his job 100% if he can't figure it out. They're not out there trying to play favorites or whatnot, and they know what those guys are capable of. And Tim Hardaway Jr. goes nuts. And so all I'm saying is I think you still start him. I think you still give him opportunity. But look, if his shot – like, look – you could tell the first 3-point shot he took, this ain't going to be it. It wasn't close. It was not like it hit back rim and came out. It was like 5 inches to the right, like 7 inches too long. Like, it was just like that. It's gross. Like, that's it. Like, he don't have it tonight. Like, minutes need to be limited. And so I'm just not done with Josh Giddey yet. Like, look, man, he went on a two-month run of great basketball. He had a terrible game to start the New Orleans series. He had an eh game in game two, and then he went nuts the last two. And so I think you still give him a chance, but yes, the leash is short. I'd still agree that Aaron Wiggins should have more minutes. And I think that you saw that last night, and I thought it did help the team once he got in and got going.
Yeah, I mean, and we've talked about this a little bit, especially, I mean, it's true with any level of basketball, but especially in the pro level, it's a fickle and a streaky sort of game. It's like everybody has had games. Shea's had games where he didn't play very well.
Right.
You know, and he just finished runner up from MVP. We've talked about Jokic. Jokic has had games in their series that he struggled completely.
Mm-hmm.
So like I always hesitate. I mean, I understand the frustration with Josh Giddey, but like you said, overall, I think, like you said, in the last 2.5 months or 3 months or whatever you get, whatever time frame, overall, he's been a very good player. You know, you can try to highlight the negatives. Okay, I just don't. I just think he's a valuable. And that's the thing is, this is kind of what they even talked about on the broadcast. And this is what's crazy about this Thunder team. We talked about this on our last pod. He's one of those parts now of a machine where there's so many pieces that you can put in there. Like, there's so many guys that you can put out there. There's so many different combinations. It's not one of those things. Like, even when you look at, like, the KD, Westbrook, those teams, right? When KD came off, even if Russ was out there, it's like, okay, Russ is going to have to bear the load. Or if both of them are off, you saw a huge drop off. You know, and you saw that with all these teams. It's like, you really don't see that. And I feel like even with Josh Giddey, he's a big part of, like, that portion of the team.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important. And I think, like I said, I expect him to bounce back. But I mean, I think people are just trying to grasp onto something to be mad about, right?
Yeah.
It is what it is. I'm not pleased with his game, but I'm not mad at him. I don't think that we should get rid of him or anything like that. I think that's crazy talk.
Yeah, I'm kind of there, even though I'm the one who was proposing for him to be traded at the trade deadline. And I still think he could be a trade piece moving forward. Like, I'm not married to Josh Giddey. I'm just saying, to act like he's going to go and play as bad as he did in game one. And game one was worse than last night. I mean,
who would you rather? Who would you rather put out there, him or Gordon Hayward?
Him. And here's the other side. For his height, I'd rather put Kenrich out there. Yeah. Like this is another question I have. Is Kenrich hurt? And look, I fully admit with Gordon Hayward, I think I understand why Dagnall keeps putting him out there, because even last night, I don't remember who it was. I want to say it may have been Ryan Stiles that follows the Thunder that tweeted this, but he said at halftime when the team came out that Gordon Hayward did a 5-minute shooting session and he did not miss a 3-point shot. Not one. Like, I watched him the whole time. Every shot he put up went in the basket. The problem is when he gets in the game, I tweeted this last night too. They were like, what adjustment? I was like, we need to undo the vaccine that he took when he got here against basketball. It's like literally he took a shoot the basketball vaccine that just does not let him. Even in the series, he had one where he gets the ball on the wing, he drives to the lane, and he's either going to get fouled because of the position of the defender, or he's going to dunk it or lay it up, and then he kicks it to the wing. It's like, literally, he thinks he has a $5 million bonus in his contract if he does not take a shot. And, like, I just, well, I don't
understand. There was a play last night where I was cracking up. They passed the ball to him. He's over kind of towards the corner, and the defender's off of him, so the defender's crashing on him. So it's like, okay, you try to take the three, right, and take the foul potentially, or you kind of like you can sidestep and there's an open lane to the goal. And I'm thinking like that's like easy, and like literally like he catches it and it's not even like it's like he just it looked like it just bounced off his hand over to Shea. And it's like, and then of course, I mean, I'm not trying to say don't give the ball to Shea, obviously, right. But it's like take the shot every once in a while. And even then, Shea had to sit there and kind of make something work with it. I mean, I don't remember if he scored or not in that play, but it was like, I can remember that play distinctly because I'm thinking like, dude, you had multiple opportunities to do something with the ball there. And you had it, like, literally he had it for less than a second.
Yeah. I mean, it's to the point now, if I'm Jason Kidd, I'm like, guys, don't even go out there. Like the whole cross match thing that they do with Giddy, where they put the center and they kind of sink the center, like sink as far in as you can without getting a technical. Like, and yeah, if he gets the ball on the wing, don't even go out there. Like, don't close, don't nothing. Like, leave him alone. And so, yeah, I'd rather, like, you know, and the Dagnall answer for every time he plays Gordon Hayward is, well, we were looking for size. Kenrich gives you size. He's just as tall as Gordon Hayward. He's not as skilled, but if all Gordon Hayward's going to do is hot potato the ball out of his hand, then get Kenrich out there. Kenrich will take an open three. He may not hit it, but he's going to at least keep the defense honest.
Well, it's you want a little bit of that. You know, we like Troy, I think, was highlighting it, or maybe you were talking about it, but we talked about a lot on the last one about Chet goes up for blocks, and sometimes he knows he's just going to get dunked on.
Yeah.
It's like you need a guy that's going to take a three and know that he's going to miss a three, but it forces – you need that guy that's going to force the defense to play tight on him.
Right.
Because there's the risk that he's going to keep hitting threes.
Yeah.
And Gordon Hayward's a good enough shooter. Like, we've seen that in his career, that he should be a threat. But you know, it is a weird situation. But yeah, like I said, overall, I don't know what the deal with Gordon Hayward is, but, I don't know. Yesterday was just a frustrating game though, man. Like, you saw those moments, like Chet played out of his mind.
Well, defensively, I think defensively, he did. Yeah. Offensively, he had a rough night, but defensively he was pretty good.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. Like, I was just thinking, like, some of the blocks he had, I was like, yeah, good God. Like, there was one where he should have got posterized, and he just absolutely stuffed him. I mean, yeah, he just was in his grill. So I thought he had a good defensive game. And then, like, even Shea had – there was, like, I remember that there was probably a time in that third quarter, a little bit into the fourth, maybe early fourth maybe, Shea was just himself and was just doing what he wanted. I mean, some of the moves he can pull are just insane.
Yeah.
And it's like when you see that, it's like you see that he is legitimately a quality MVP candidate. He should have won the MVP. And so it's like you saw a lot of those bright spots. It's just they didn't put it together. It just the energy wasn't there. And you know, and the other thing is like it just felt like one of those games where Dallas was able to feed off everything that they needed to. They were able to keep staying hot. Apparently, there was a bunch of the fans that were heckling Kyrie and Luka. It's like, dude, you're just pouring gas on the fire.
Yeah.
Right. And that just isn't helping. That you could tell Kyrie. I mean, I saw there was like at the end of the game, he was shooting free throws and there had been a fan heckling him and he was like waving bye to him and like telling him to get the hell off the court.
Kyrie was very engaged with whatever person courtside was giving them the business, which I
did feel bad. Was Kyler Murray there last night or did I just hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kyler and James Conner were both there last night.
So last night I was during the game, I remember if I went to like put my plate in the kitchen or something, but they're like, oh, he's getting into it with Kyler Murray. And I went back and rewound it. And it's like Kyler Murray's just standing there. Kyler Murray's not engaged with him at all. Like Kyler Murray's just literally like chilling. And some random fan, I don't know who he is, maybe somebody does, was like yelling at I think Luka. And it's just like, I don't know, dude. It's just so dumb. Like, it's like, I get it. Like, I don't mind a little chippiness between fans and the players, but it's like, when you're getting beat, just shut up, you know? Like,
yeah. No, absolutely.
So, and like I said, I was a big fan of, I honestly, like I said, even though Kyrie didn't put up a lot of points, he made assists. He was always, I think he played a good game, even if you're going to say, well, he only had 9 points. It's like, dude, he was just there in the game, engaged the entire time. And
he's been real sneaky on defense. Just some sneaky deflection, some sneaky, poke the ball away.
I don't know if he had two or three steals, maybe. I know he had, I think he had two for sure. So, yeah, I mean, he can say whatever you want about Kyrie, but it's like, dude, he played a good game even without the points. So
yeah. I, you know, again, It's going to be interesting. The thing that you hate about losing this game at home, I think for me, is I think it's fair to say the Pelicans' atmosphere in the playoffs, especially being down two games to none, was not, it's not overly engaged, and that's just not a super connected fan base anyway. Dallas will be. It will be loud. It will be intense. They will be mouthy. They will be into it. And so this will be the first time that the Thunder have really experienced a playoff atmosphere. And, you know, that's going to energize Luka. He loves that, that kind of stuff. Your role players play better at home, all the different things. How do they react to that? You know, and if they react poorly, they're going to be down 2-1. And they're going to have to crawl their way out. I still believe this team will split. I still think this is a 7-game series. I mean, again, as well as the Thunder played in game one, they won, you know, they didn't blow that game open till the fourth quarter, right? And this one, you know, Dallas got off to a huge lead. You cut it down small. They open it up again. The Thunder closed it back down again. And even in the fourth quarter, you felt like they had a chance to come back and win that game playing as badly as they did and with Dallas playing as good as they did. But that's the thing. It feels like both games there's been like an unattainable high for the Thunder that they, you know, is more here. And now in game two, there's definitely been this unbelievable high for the Mavericks that you feel like is going to come back to here. And if both teams play here, it's going to be down to the final couple possessions of every fourth quarter that there is.
Well, and that's, you know, something we should talk about real quick. It's just, like I said, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but that last six, I think it was about 6-7 minutes in the game, you know, Dallas was up like 9 or 11, whatever, somewhere in that neighborhood, you know, 9 to 12 points or whatever. The Thunder pretty much shut them down still defensively. And like the Mavericks kind of played a little sloppy too at that point in the game. Yeah. And it was just, it was like, again, that was what was so frustrating to me is like, you're watching that part of the game. And this is just one of those youth coming out. You don't need to get, it's the same thing we talk about with football where it's like, you don't need to get all 100 yards in one
yeah.
play.
Yeah.
Right. Like take the 2 points, take a layup, move the ball around. You've got plenty of time. And it's like, if they had just done that, they could have even got a big lead.
Well, I mean, even like little I said, things too, like Shea just not turning his back to the guy that he's guarding and letting him cut straight to the basket for an inbounds dunk when you just got to stop, like, you know, and then you're fighting for a rebound. It tips out to Tim Hardaway and everybody just watches him. Nobody closes out and lets him just set his
feet. I did think, so, and this one's funny because I did see some tweets from, it's funny. I think because of the game one stuff, I did see some like questions on the officiating, which I did think like there was a foul that they called, I don't remember if it was on Dort, but it was like Luka just completely shoulder checked Dort and initiated contact, and they called it on Dort. I think it was Dort. I could be misspeaking, but I was like, I don't know how you call that foul.
Well, I see what happened. If you watch the play from the get-go, they get chest to chest. Luka grabs Dort and pulls Dort in and starts going through Dort. Right. So that's where the foul occurs, technically. Right. And as he knocks Dort over, Dort reaches around and puts his hand on Luka's back to try to brace himself. But when the ref sees it, it looks like Dort is dragging Luka to the ground. When you see the replay, but still, it was a terrible call.
But well, I was going to say it. There was that. There was the charging call that Dagnall challenged that I was like, I didn't understand that at all.
No.
You know, there was some, but it's like, again, this was, I felt like this game, as much as we could sit here and talk about poor calls, I didn't really think it was poorly officiated overall.
No.
I think there was calls for both teams.
I think what exasperated the officiating last night for Oklahoma City Thunder fans was the challenges, right? Like the block on Chet that obviously he gets raked across the arm like crazy, and they're just like, yeah, it's not a foul. And it's like, okay, you know, the charge where even the commentator's like, oh yeah, he's outside, he is set, like that's a charge. And then they come back and still, you know, and so it's those ones where, again, It's in replay and it's in frame by frame, and you're able to see what happened. And same with the Luka play. You get to see the instant replay in slow motion. And you go, that's all Luka doing that. And y'all are calling it on, like, what are y'all doing? And so, but yeah, I agree with you. It was not, I didn't think it was some atrocious officiating.
Yeah, the reviews were questionable, but, you know, it is what it is. I didn't think that it changed the outcome of the game in any way. But yeah, I mean, I also still feel like this is another thing. Like, I'm going to say this, and I'm sure if there's a Dallas fan that listens to us, they're going to be mad. Jason Kidd is a terrible coach, in my opinion. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. It's like, I don't understand if he didn't have Luka and Kyrie, that are two of the best players in basketball on his team, like, this team would be as bad as, I mean, I know it's easy to say the ifs, but it's like, there's nothing he does that's special, right? Like, Luka's right. Just really, really good. Kyrie's just really, really good. Everybody else played at a higher level, but it's like, there's like things that he does where I'm like, I don't understand why you're not, like, there was a series last night, I can't remember who it was, one of their guys got hurt, who's grasping his hand, who could look like he was going to barely be able to.
Oh, it was Gafford. It was Gafford when he dislocated his finger slapping against the backboard.
Yeah. And he's like grasping his hand, trying, like, it looks like he can't even, like, he would be able to shoot or dribble with it. And like, they come down the floor and like, they set and they like stop. And it's like, okay, you have a number of timeouts. Call a timeout and figure out what's going on with your guy. Like, this is a big player. This is a big moment. You've got momentum. I understand that. But like, you've also got a guy limping around out there that may not even be able to catch the ball. And that happened like a couple of times. There was another play where I don't remember, somebody else got like gimped up.
Well, my favorite moment was when Luka subbed out and Kyrie subbed out at the same time. And the commentator's like, this is interesting. Oklahoma City's kind of closed the gap and he's going to sit Kyrie and Luka. And then literally, because they didn't communicate what they were doing, they both had to sit down. Because Luke or Kyrie had already left the court and they had to wait a possession, then sub Kyrie right back in. I mean, like, so it didn't hurt them, but it's just like, bro, like, come on, man. Like, this can't happen. Like, that happens in a bad situation, and you let that building get going, like, that could have spun that game in a heartbeat if play would have gone in such a way where he didn't get to sub Kyrie right back in.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, when you watch the Dallas map, like, this is like what Troy said it, the disparity between Dagnall and Kidd is crazy. Like, it's absurd. But when you watch the Thunder play offense, right?
Yeah.
For instance, it's like, they're moving the ball. Like, they have a set, you know, I mean, obviously last night they got a little sloppy, but it's like, when they're running the offense, how it's meant to be run, it's organized. It's very like pass the ball. I mean, it's organized, structured basketball.
Yeah.
Right. When you watch the Dallas Mavericks play their offense, I guess how they're supposed to play it, it's really just everybody kind of spaces out and you just throw the ball.
Pick and
give
roll.
It to Luka.
Pick and roll.
Yeah. Pick and roll. Like, let Luka and Kyrie make some crazy plays or passes and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Like I said, I mean, I just, you know, I don't see if they had a good coach. They would be crazy good. You know, I mean, Jason Kidd just is. There's a lot of moments, like I said last night, that I was like, I don't understand why this guy is leading such a good franchise, but, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Well, it's obvious the players like him. They play hard for him. I think those are the things that they major on, and then they just trust the abilities of Kyrie and Luka to carry him. But I'm with you. I mean, if you could draw some things up a little bit more and do a little bit more, but that's where we are spoiled, I think, with Dagnall and the way his system works with intentional cutting and all those things. Now, I also would say the wildness of Oklahoma City's offense, where they are cutting so much, that led to a couple turnovers last night too. I mean, there were multiple times where, you know, the wing guy is cutting to the lane at the same time that Shea or whoever chooses to drive, and they end up in the same spot, you know. And there was one even where Shea like kicked it to the wing and nobody's there because they were cutting, you know, right as they came through. And that was three or four of your turnovers last night, you know? And so Just a lot, man. But look, I mean, don't let PJ Washington go for 66%, you know, from 3-point range. And, you know, I think you do much better, communicate a little bit better on defense. And at worst, it's a fourth quarter game that you have every opportunity to win. And as far as I'm concerned, you have one of the top five players in the world to close it out. And I think you have one of the top five clutch players in the world in J-Dub to close it out. And you're going to give yourself a chance, you know, and Dallas can say the same thing. Luka's one of the best players on planet Earth. Kyrie's one of the best players on planet Earth. And it's really going to come down to who doesn't make mistakes down the stretch and see where this thing falls. If both teams are playing again at their even keel, I think this is a 7-game series that's going to be just an absolute war. You know, so.
Well, and like I said, let me ask you this, I guess. Let me ask you first. Who is your player of the game for OKC? Give me one for OKC and give me one for Dallas.
Like as far as last night goes?
Yeah.
Oh, Shea was our best player, hands down, last night, I thought. And then, I mean, PJ Washington for them. As great as Luka was in the first quarter, he only scored like 5 points in the second and third quarter. He got him off to it, but PJ Washington, I mean, it was just like, seriously? Like, this has to end. I mean, even the commentators at halftime are like, this ain't going to – and it did. I mean, he won them the game with that 3-point shooting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. I think those are both good picks, but I guess to pick something different. I'm going to go Chet. I know he didn't have a good offensive game, but I said defensively he was stellar. I thought. And like I said, he played tough. That's what I like to see. There was a number of times that he was fighting hard at the rim and just wasn't giving them that. I mean, that's kind of been the thing that we talked about where when you have especially big guys drive the lane, you know, is Chet big enough? Is he bulky enough that he's gonna be able to sustain that? That's kind of been their weakness all season. Is that teams with big guys, even like Luka, is a big guy that if he drives the lane, that's a lot for this defense to handle sometimes. And Chet, I feel like answered the call.
Yeah.
Offensively, again, he wasn't stellar, but defensively, like I said, that may be the best game he's had in this playoff. And then offensively. Yeah, I guess I'm going to go because I don't want to pick Luka just because he annoyed me so much last night. I'm going to go Kyrie. Like I said, he didn't score a lot of points, but he was just involved in the game for them constantly. He was moving the ball. He seemed to be he just was that present force at all times, and he made everybody else play better. I mean, he was the one that fed a lot of PJ Washington threes, and he created space, and he played smart basketball. I think that's one of those things that, again, you know, they were talking about last night. I mean, the announcers even said that he's – points and you think he didn't have an impact, and he's had,
yeah,
I think maybe the second biggest impact on that team outside of PJ Washington.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think there's plenty of room for hope. And there's plenty of room for doubt right now for Oklahoma City Thunder fans. Will, you know, that whole youth movement thing we've talked about, are they too young? And we're going to find out. They're going on the road, and youth, the coin phrase is role players don't travel. And youth doesn't travel. We're going to find out. And if it does, all of a sudden, the hope goes way back up. If it doesn't, I mean, hey, we said from the get-go with this team, win a playoff series. And they've done it. They've done it. Everything else from now is gravy. Let's see where it goes. Let's see what happens. But I still firmly believe this is a 6 or 7-game series, no doubt.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think it's a 6-game series, but that's me being hopeful. That's me maybe a little copium.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just say real quick, I also find it funny that there's a lot of people that are putting, it's like, dude, this is one game. I understand the context of it, but still, they've lost one game in the playoffs. Like, in the scheme of things, what we talked about is if they get out of the first round, you can already consider this somewhat a success.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, and here's the other deal. This is my superstitious side. They had not lost a game since April 5th. It's been a month since they've lost a basketball game. And with a healthy Shea, they haven't lost a game since like March 20-something, like 22nd or whatever. So it's been a month and a half. Like, I'm sorry, but in basketball especially, you're just due losses. You know, like I almost chalked up like their lack of focus and all that stuff is just, you guys were due. You were just due for a bad game. Like you were due for a night that even when you're playing bad, it doesn't go your way. You've had it. Now let's do it. Now, if Dallas does this again, okay, then we've really got a problem on our hands, and maybe this is where it all starts to fall apart, but still fully confident in the team to bounce back and get things going. So
Yeah, this is like you said, this is the next game is big. You either respond and you use that as fuel to get back in it and just do what you do and be as dominant as we think you can be, or you're gonna cave under the pressure. So
and I really hope, which I don't think it will, but I'm very curious knowing how many people from Oklahoma live in the Dallas Metroplex. I am very curious to see what the number of Thunder fans are in that arena. And I know for a fact, I know like 7 or 8 people who are traveling to Dallas for the game Saturday. And the fact that I know that many people just at random, they're like, oh yeah, I'm going. It's like, okay. Let's see what we got. And it would be awesome. It would be awesome if that place just had a load of them. So all to say, for the two people that listen, if one of you happen to be a Thunder fan that lives in Dallas, get a ticket and go to the game. Get a ticket and go to the game. You won't be disappointed. It'd be awesome.
yeah, it's that would be it'd be a fun game to go to.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. The only other Oklahoma sports news, and I'm not even gonna waste a bunch of time on it, but Jermaine Lele, our portal addition to the Oklahoma Sooners, decides to go to Texas yesterday.
It's so, I mean, like it's I'll say it's a good thing, but it's like you got Dominic Williams. Like I don't It is what it is. I think this is one of those things where he saw the writing on the wall that he wasn't going to be, you know, it is. I just don't. Everybody's trying to say, oh, Oklahoma is poor and they can't afford him now. It's like, I don't think that that's the case.
I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, knowing some of the people that we know and some of the things that we've heard, yes, somebody upped the NIL deal. And I just think that, look, OU is definitely, with the Dominic Williams, shown they're willing to spend money. That's there. At the same end, when you've already agreed upon your contract, when you've already agreed upon everything, and you say, I'm committed, and then all of a sudden you want to come back and go, well, I know I said yes, but I just feel like Brent Venables at that point was like, yeah, we're good. Like, you know, we're not playing that game. We're not doing that. And so, I mean, good luck to him. And look, he will probably be one of their most primary D tackles there, as where he was going to be a very rotational piece here. And so, you know, good luck to the guy. But that was so random, that just happened yesterday. Felt like we needed to at least address it, you know, before next week. So, anyways, good luck to you, Lole. Hope you have fun. We'll see you in Dallas. So, that's all we got. Again, we just wanted to do a quick one. Try to calm your nerves, give you a little hope, give you a little bit of feedback on the game last night. It was a good one. Who knows how much we'll get to do these, and it just worked out we could today. So we thought we'd give it to you. So, anyways, again, we're not insiders or anything else. So please subscribe. Please comment, YouTube, all the different things. Leave a comment. If you're on Spotify, we try to do polls with every podcast. So please jump in there, do that. We're having a great time. Hope you are too. I'm Daryl. That's Jared. We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye, Baker.
Cha-ching, it's under Moneyball.
You can unhitch the wagon. Put the ponies in the ball.